Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you just can't figure out why every conversation ends with you feeling bad, tune into my other podcast, Love and Abuse, where I help you learn exactly what is making the relationship so much more difficult than it needs to be. When you're done with this podcast, head over to loveandabuse.com and listen to the show that tells you everything you need to know about navigating the difficult relationship. Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now. Welcome to the show. My name is Paul Coliani, and I'm here to help you learn to deal with difficult people and tackle life's challenges without compromising who you are. Been 10 years, I still have to read that. The show consists of my personal opinions and is meant for informational purposes only. Always seek a professional for your mental health and well-being. I want to make sure I get the intro right. Don't want to mess that up, because I've changed it over the years, so that's why I read it. I'm so glad you're here. Thanks for joining me. I'm going to talk about, cause and effect today. Somebody wrote in the Facebook group, the Overwhelmed Brain Empowerment group on Facebook, that something happened at work. They said it hit me pretty hard with some kind of trauma response. We had a potluck they've been involved in at the company, and they all brought different dishes to celebrate, and it was to start at a specific time. They went on to say, I only wanted a little of my own dish, as I used to work in food services, and I'm really weird about eating other people's food that they have made at home. Yeah, I hear you. They said, I'm a germophobe for sure. I also didn't want to explain this and be judged as I have been before in life. So I went into the break room early to get a little bit of food that I had made before it was picked through. Then a person that works in the office walked in and stated that it wasn't time and I had to put it in the back or put it back because the owner would be mad if I started early. I explained that putting it back wasn't very sanitary and I didn't want to do that. So I found myself, a grown adult, hiding my own food that I paid for and I made so that we wouldn't all get in trouble. It brought back so many bad feelings, and I ended up crying at work. Awful, since my desk sits in the middle of everyone, and people kept asking me about it. I'm so embarrassed, I don't even want to go back. I cried myself to sleep. I feel like I'm 10 again, when I couldn't do anything right, and I was in trouble when I didn't even try. And now I'm just so sad, and I have brain fog. What is this, and how do I get through it? Thank you so much for sharing that. I mean, that's a vulnerable thing to share, certainly, because, you know, as adults, most people that listen to the show are adults. Some aren't. Some are still growing. Good to have you here. But most of us listening are adults that sometimes that inner child has an issue. And the inner child comes out and can get angry, can get pouty, can get sad, can get a lot of things. The inner child has a lot of emotions. It becomes emotionally triggered, and that is what then takes over. And so when we cry about something, it can feel like we're 10 years old again. And I'm not just saying that that's the inner child happening. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that it can feel like that, just like this person wrote. They felt like they were 10 again. And so we have these old emotional triggers that, if we haven't dealt with them, if we haven't processed them, if we haven't healed from them, they could show up. And sometimes they show up at the worst times. I remember something that happened to me. I got angry at a friend's kid. And I spoke with aggression in my voice and harshness. And then I calmed down and I relaxed and I thought I hid it well. Then Asha, my fiance, said, you were pretty angry. And I said, no, I wasn't. I was just frustrated. But she caught it. She knew I was angry. And I was, because I was frustrated, but I was frustrated to the point that this kid wouldn't give me the answer I wanted. So I got a little testy. That was a personal development moment for sure. That was a challenge that I needed to work on and work through and reflect upon, because it was something that I didn't know was in there. It felt like it took over. And I don't want to be out of control, just like this person. They probably don't want to be out of control. You don't want to be out of control. You want to be in control so you don't lose it in front of other people, or you don't want to look like an idiot. You don't want to feel embarrassed. So you want to stay in control. At least this is my opinion. I think it's nice to be able to stay in control. Hence, I don't like to get drunk. I don't like drugs. I don't like to be out of control. So I do my best to work on that stuff. In the past, I wasn't so good at that. Now I'm much better at that. And even since this incident with our friend's kid, I don't do that anymore. Once that happened, I realized, whoa, I need to work on that. I need to figure that out. What was I so upset about? But there is a part of us that seems to take over. Now, yes, our inner child can be emotionally triggered. There can be something that we're still holding on to from our upbringing. And our fight or freeze mechanism can kick in, or fight or flight and freeze. And when it does, the part of us that is conscious and can stay in control takes a back seat. And suddenly our instincts activate and they're in charge and they're taking care of us. They're protecting us. They're helping us out. But we don't always want that, because sometimes these instincts are based on old programming. I know instincts and old programming, not necessarily in the same ballpark, but it can happen. This is what happens, is that our old programming makes us think there is something dangerous there. And so if we think there's something dangerous, our instincts will activate and take over and help us get out of that danger. To this person, the person who is a germaphobe, you know, self-proclaimed germaphobe, I kind of laughed that they said, I'm worried about the food that other people bring in because they cooked it at home. I've been the same way for a long time. It is disconcerting to me, or a little bit worrisome to me. And that's a strong word. That's not really what I really feel. But it is a little bit worrisome to me that people have their own standards at home. My kitchen does not look like your kitchen, does not look like their kitchen. It is not cleaned like your kitchen is, or it is cleaner than your kitchen. I mean, there are all kinds of standards. We don't have the health department coming to our homes and checking out what our standards are. So when somebody else cooks, it takes a lot of faith that they didn't put the fruits and vegetables on the same cutting board as the raw chicken. It takes a lot of faith that they are practicing healthy standards in their own kitchen. So I get it. That's why I was laughing. You know, I totally get it. And I still have somewhat of a germophobic response about double dipping. So when somebody's eating chips and dip, I've even told my friends this. So this is where we get into this person's challenge here, is when you have other people and they have food, or they're sharing food, or how about a buffet? You go to a buffet, everyone is kind of picking at the same food. There's got to be some faith in there that nobody is doing anything wrong or weird in that food, or they are not touching the food with their hands. They're only using the tongs or whatever. But even with my friends, the dip comes out, and I say, let me get a second bowl, because that way Asha and I can share our own. And then everyone can double dip. And that's how I handle it. I don't say, hey, nobody double dip, because that'll gross me out. I say, hey, I'm going to get a second bowl so we can all double dip in our own bowls. That's kind of how I handle anything that bothers me, especially when it comes to food. No, I'll take care of that. Let me get my own. I'll say something like that. And so that is my go-to. If you're ever around me, I say that, you know, that is my germophobia coming up, saying that I don't want you putting that chip in your mouth and sticking it back in the dip and then putting that chip in your mouth again. That's not the kind of practice that makes me feel good and comfortable. I have actually gotten more relaxed around that now. I don't think about it too much. I think it's because as I get older, I figured, well, I've lived this long. I've lived through a lot. I've probably eaten more germs than I can count. And that's just how it is. I'm okay. And I know there are people out there listening now saying, well, you know, the body needs germs. It needs to develop the antibodies so it can fight off other germs. And I totally get it. I get it. Still, if you think about it too much, you're going to become obsessive. You're going to think about what you're eating. And I want to say to anyone right now, if you're a germaphobe, do not look at anything under a microscope. Do not look at anything, because you'll never want to eat again. You'll never want to go to sleep again, because I won't get into details. But everything has something in it at the microscopic level. We have many little things at the microscopic level inside of our bodies. And all of these things communicate or fight or work together. They're all doing things under our radar. We can't tell what's happening. Scientists know this and other people know this, but most of us walk around not knowing what's going on at the microscopic level. So that's what keeps most of us sane. We don't think about what it looks like, or at least most of us don't think about what's going on at that deep level, at that microscopic level, because there's no reason to worry ourselves about it because we were born that way. We were born with all this stuff. And what ends up happening is we end up obsessing about what's germy. We obsess, some of us obsess about what's in that. Who touched it? Did they wash their hands? I actually worked with a kid who didn't wash his hands and went straight to cutting food. I wasn't going to have any of that food. I wasn't going to have any food that that kid touched, because I saw him leave the bathroom without washing his hands. And that just grossed me out. So I didn't want to do it. Even though I know in my life that somebody has left the bathroom and handled food that I've eaten. And I'm okay. I'm still here. I'm okay. Maybe my body did develop antibodies. Maybe that happening made me stronger for the times it happens again. Because it will happen again. I go to restaurants and I won't say anything, but it does happen. There are things that happen that we don't know about. And perhaps that's best that we don't know about it so we can enjoy our lives. And what happens is we can become obsessive about something, and obsession causes us to focus on something very clearly and make images in our head and make sounds and conjure up smells. I mean, our obsessions can really take over and cause us to be fearful. And so this can happen, and we can carry these fears with us for years and years, all our lives. And that's not a way to live. We don't want to live obsessing about things that may never really harm us. Or if they did, then why would we want to spend 20, 30, 50 years obsessing about it if it only harmed us once? Well, if I can obsess enough, I can avoid it. No, you won't be able to avoid most things you obsess about, unfortunately. I'm sorry to say. You will not be able to avoid most things that you obsess about. So that's what I've learned. As I've gotten older, I realized that I can't avoid most of the things that I worry about. I can't avoid them. And so the more I obsess about it, the more my quality of life goes down, and I can't enjoy a simple meal. I can't enjoy a simple handshake because I'm so obsessive, because I keep forming these pictures in my mind. I remember one of my mentors said, I think this was on, might have been an audio class I listened to. He was talking about one of his students, and the student said, I keep making this picture in my mind, and the picture makes me afraid, and I don't know what to do when I'm afraid and I just can't go on with what I'm doing. It was something like that. I'm sorry, I don't have the details. But the teacher said, why would you make that picture in your mind? And the person said, well, I can't help it. And he said, well, you just said I make this picture in my mind. Yes, I make this picture. I mean, it just happens. Well, why would you do that? Why would you make that picture in your mind? Why wouldn't, when that picture starts, why wouldn't you make a different picture in your mind? And so that really caused the student to think, and that caused me to remember that forever. Because some of these images that we create in our mind, it's like we're making a choice to create them. Now, don't bite my head off. I know sometimes it just happens. Sometimes we do have a lot of trauma and these pictures come up and it doesn't feel like we have a choice. But we do have a choice to make different pictures. Even if that picture, it comes up, you know, the old picture that you don't like, even if that continues to come up, we still have a choice to make a different picture. If the picture of a dog biting you comes up because you have trauma about a dog biting you from your past, you can also create an image of a dog playing with you and being friendly toward you. And you can, this is actually something I learned a long time ago, you can actually put one image over the other. Ow, the dog's biting me, that makes me afraid of dogs. And then I see another picture and I put it over the one of the dog biting me and that feels different. It takes practice and you work at it and you keep replacing one image with another. This is part of my training when I was going through my coaching and things like that. It's really neat. One picture can replace the other. One picture you feel like you have no choice making can be covered by another picture that you do have a choice in making. So I know this doesn't solve PTSD or old trauma, but it's something you practice. It's something that you can learn to do. Otherwise, our inner child or something inside us might be the one that takes over and says, no, let me make the images. And that's when our adult self, the part of us that we want to be in control, needs to step up and say, no, I'm going to make the image that I want. The ones that you're making, they are causing me harm. They are making me afraid. They are making me make decisions that aren't necessarily good for me. They are making me live in fear, so I don't want to make those images anymore. And then the inner child might say, yeah, but that's all I can think about. Well, I'm going to give you something else to think about. And I know I'm very much simplifying this. This isn't therapy. I'm just giving you some other way to think about the images and the sounds that we make in our minds. Sometimes we can replace those or at least combine them with better images and sounds. And that can be helpful. For example, the obsession about germs. When I think about the double dipping, if I were the person I was maybe 5 years ago, this wasn't long ago, and the dip came out, I used to make images of people's mouths on the chips and people's fingers on the chips, and those images would be in my mind. And then all the germs that are part of that, and all of that was coming to my mind, and I was making these images. And I finally said, no, I don't want to make those images anymore. Because every time I make those images, I freak out. I get a little crazy inside my head. I don't want to do that. I don't want to deal with that. And I don't want to be that person. It doesn't mean that I have to change what I do. Or it doesn't mean I have to watch somebody double dip and then use my chip in the same dip. It just means that I stop making those images so I can have a more balanced approach to something that should be so benign, so harmless. And that's what I did. I started not making those images anymore because I caught myself doing it. I caught myself having thoughts. And if we can catch those thoughts while we're having them, we might be able to change them. Discovering that I was the challenging one in my romantic relationships was a tough pill to swallow. It was a pivotal moment when I realized that accepting my partner for who they truly are, instead of who I wanted them to be, was the key to a happy relationship. That self-awareness journey led me to the healthiest and happiest relationship I've ever had. I'm in it now. It's all about looking inward and working on yourself, and that's where our sponsor BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp offers convenient, flexible online therapy that fits your schedule. Fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. And remember, you can switch therapists anytime without additional charge if you need a different perspective. If you're ready to work on being the best version of yourself for you and your relationships, give BetterHelp a try. Become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit BetterHelp.com/brain today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/brain. Embrace the journey to a better you with BetterHelp. Now, of course, what this person is talking about is something deeper. I mean, I say, of course, I think that's what this is about. Something deeper, something probably from their upbringing, something from childhood. Maybe their mom or dad said, "Don't eat that gum off the floor. It's disgusting and full of germs. You're going to get sick." I mean, that might do a number on a kid if they think that eating food off the floor might get them sick. And of course, you don't want your kid eating food off the floor. But what does that translate into a child's mind? Don't eat gum? Don't touch the floor? What is the translation? And we carry that translation with us, and it generalizes into other things. It generalizes into more broader areas. And if we don't think about it anymore, then we carry around a fear of doing something that maybe doesn't even require any extra thought, but we give it that extra thought. And so we have these old patterns and old beliefs and ideas that we think are just the way we are, and there's nothing we can do about it. But they started sometime in the past, which is what, if this person was standing in front of me right now, I would ask, what's the earliest memory you have of, for example, being a germaphobe? What is the earliest memory you have? You know, go back in time and figure out, well, last year I was like this, and 10 years ago I did that, and 15 years, you know, when I was a teenager, I did this, or I had this happen to me. Think about those times, because what I've learned is that there's always a first time. And it could be very young, and you may not even remember it. There's always a first time, but I like to look for that first time. I like to think about and remember what that first time was. And if I can't remember it, I like to ask myself, well, what could it be? What could be the first time? What could be the reason I'm like this? Well, it might be because I watched my mom do it for years. That can happen. You watch somebody else do something for a long time, and you pick it up. And you think, this is the way I'm supposed to be. Otherwise, my life will be terrible. Yet, sometimes we make our life terrible when we pick up what we think is supposed to be good for us, but it's not. Because somebody else is doing it because they think it's supposed to be good for them. And of course, you know, we have infection and disease and all this other stuff that's in the world. And that can create fear and obsessive thoughts and things like that. And then we walk around in this fear of getting whatever somebody else has. And sometimes it's very valid. And sometimes you have to look in the past and ask yourself, well, I made it this far. You know, and I'm not talking to people that are immunocompromised or anything like that. I'm not talking about people that actually have to be very careful about what they expose themselves to. I'm talking about people maybe with a normal, healthy immune system that have survived a whole lot and may not necessarily need to be so cautious. I'm not saying you shouldn't be cautious. I'm just saying when it becomes obsessively cautious, that's when we have to be careful that we're not actually decreasing our quality of life because we're so overly cautious about protecting ourselves from that which we cannot necessarily protect ourselves anyway, because we go right back to the everything's in the microbial world, and we don't want to know what that looks like. We don't want to look through the microscope. At the same time, learning about those things might also be helpful to you. So that's not my answer to this person, but I'm just kind of throwing this out as a foundation and something that I've thought about, something to help me get past a lot of my germophobia. Because I've learned that a lot of constant stress and worry brings more constant stress and worry. I've learned that. And the more I stress about something, the more I stress about something. It just doesn't end. And so I got sick of stressing about things. I don't want to stress about somebody putting their chip in again. I have to remember that I have, how can I say this nicely? I have kissed people before. We have exchanged that kissing. We've exchanged fluids in that way. And somebody might find that gross. And somebody might find that wonderful. And somebody might not think about it at all. I've never thought about it until I started thinking about it and started realizing that, I kissed this person. Why can't I eat after them? I kissed them. Why can't I drink after them? And I know I'm getting a little deep and probably gross for some people, but I'm just trying to highlight that we sometimes focus on the wrong things. We're focusing on, oh, that might be harmful to us, so let's not do that. Instead of, well, I've survived all this time and I've done all these things. Why do I have to focus on all the bad, on all the fearful stuff when I've gotten through so much without even thinking about it? Like when I'm not thinking about it, I seem to be okay. And again, I'm not talking about people that have compromised immune systems. I'm not talking about people that have to watch everything because if they don't, they could get sick or worse. I'm just talking about the obsessive thinking that we can get ourselves into that will keep us from having a normal or higher quality of life. Now, let's talk about this person who wrote, who asked, I'm just so sad. I have brain fog. What is this? How do I get through it? I'm so embarrassed. I don't even want to go back. I cried myself to sleep. This person cried at work. I started talking about cause and effect at the beginning of this episode. And when something like this, a message like this comes to me, or somebody I'm working with tells me their story, I try to look for the direct cause and effect. I try to get through all the flowery stuff, all the fill-in-the-gap stuff, and get right to the cause. And if I look at this message, I ask myself, okay, what is the cause? What is the stimuli that caused this reaction in this person? And one of the first words was, I didn't want to have to explain this and be judged. So that's one of the first words I read. And that could be something that happened in their past, which it is. They said it happened before in their life, and it could be associated with something deeper. And that something deeper is what I'm looking for. Like, I don't want to be judged, and that makes me feel uncomfortable, and I have to explain myself. So that could be certainly a trigger, certainly a cause. But what's deeper than that? Well, I think what it is the next thing, or a couple sentences down, they said, I found myself, a grown adult, hiding my own food that I paid for and I made so that we all wouldn't get in trouble. And at, right at that moment, this is where they wrote, it brought back so many bad feelings. I ended up crying at work. Now, there it is, the bad feelings. Hiding the food that you paid for so that you wouldn't get in trouble. So there's something in this sentence or two that is the deeper level, the deepest part of what's going on inside of you. I hid my food, and I didn't want to get us in trouble. So let me ask you some questions, and I know you won't be able to answer me, but think about these. Ask yourself, if I didn't hide my food, what would happen? And you want to figure that out. What would happen if I didn't hide my food? It's food that you paid for, you made, and what would happen if you didn't hide it? So your immediate answer is, I didn't want us to get in trouble. So that's my next question. What would happen if everyone got in trouble? These are important to answer, and I really want you to dig deep, because this is what's stopping you from getting past this. You are worried about getting people in trouble. So there's a part of it about being judged. There's a part about being a germaphobe, and there's a part about hiding your food, and maybe that's a little embarrassing, or you were feeling like a child because you said you were crying like you were 10 again. But this one sentence stands out to me, so we wouldn't all get in trouble. My question is, okay, what would happen if everyone got in trouble? Now, your answer might be, well, if everyone got in trouble, it would be my fault. Which I would follow up with the question, how is it being your fault a bad thing? That goes pretty deep, doesn't it? How is it being your fault a bad thing? Let's just say that you said, well, everyone would be mad at me, or they wouldn't like me anymore. I'm going to go deeper. How is them not liking you a bad thing? How about this? Who cares? Of course, I know you care. No, I want people to like me. I do too. But we need to find out what is driving these fears or this maybe shame or guilt or whatever is driving this. We need to find out what it is, or at least get in touch with some deeper stuff, which is why I ask these what I call stupid questions that lead to healing. What would happen if everyone did get in trouble because you started eating early and they all knew it was your fault? What would happen? Would you just feel ashamed? Would you feel bad? And then I would ask, okay, why? Why would you feel bad? And you might say, because I disappointed people. Well, let me ask you this. What's so bad about disappointing people? This is me digging and digging. I do this to myself. I dig deeper and deeper because I don't want the stupid questions, the simple questions to go by. I really want to dig into that because I need to know why this is a problem for me. And the only way I can figure that out is to keep drilling down and keep digging in until I get to the core of what is causing this fear or what is causing me to cry or hide my food or whatever it is. You said you were embarrassed. You didn't even want to go back. You cried yourself to sleep. What were you crying about? Were you embarrassed because you couldn't stand up for yourself? Were you embarrassed because people were pointing at you thinking you were silly or stupid? Or you know, what are the words that come to you? Right now, I'm maybe guessing that you are worried about how other people see you. Because being a germaphobe, who cares? I'm a germaphobe, at least in some small way now. I used to be a bigger one. But who cares? That's your thing. And in my opinion, who cares? I mean, own it. Yep, I'm a germaphobe. I'm not going to put my chips in that dip. Because that's who I am. What are you, crazy? Why? I mean, that's stupid. So what? I know you don't care, but I care. So that's who I am. I'm going to own it. That's the first place I go with any type of, I don't want to call it a dysfunction, but any type of belief or any type of pattern, any type of behavior that you do. As long as it's not hurting anyone else, own it. Who cares? Well, why don't you want to have any dip? Because I'm a freak about people double dipping, so I just don't do it. What? Are you crazy? Maybe. But that's how I am, and that's what I do. So I hope you're my friend and you're not going to pick on me all night. I might think that in my mind, and friends don't do that. Friends don't pick on you. They honor where you are. Now at work, yeah, you might get picked on. That might happen. So what? These are coworkers, not going to be at your wedding. These are people, I mean, some of them might be, but these are people that you work with, and you're going to have your flaws, you're going to have your nuances, and they will too. So what? Now, I'm not minimizing what you're going through. This is probably very serious for you. You probably feel it like every time this happens. And now, since I've read this, you probably have been back to work. I'm willing to bet that going back to work, it's probably not really talked about anymore. You probably don't hear anything about it. Or if you do, it's maybe somebody that comes up and say, hey, you know that incident? I mean, maybe you don't. Maybe you don't hear anything about it. And if that's the case, you can look at that as survival. What do I mean by that? That means you survived. you survived something you were afraid of, which brings up all these other questions that I asked. What were you afraid of? And what would happen if you did get everyone in trouble? And what would happen if the owner did get mad? Because you said that in your message too. They said, what'd they say? A person walks into the office, walked in and stated that it wasn't time, and I had to put it back because the owner would get mad if I started early. Who is this person? Who is the person that walked in and said that? What's it to them? Well, you know, because they're trying to make the party good for everyone. Well, what are they? Are they like the party police? Are they the food police? And why are they dictating what you should be doing? I'm not saying that you should rebel and defy and all that stuff. I'm saying own who you are. This is who I am. This is what I'm going to do. Well, I'm sorry you don't like that. You know, you might say that to this person. I'm sorry that you feel that way, but this is who I am. This is what I'm going to do. And this is how I feel comfortable. And I hope you can accept that about me because this is who I am. Now, I'm not saying you have to do any of this stuff. I'm saying you develop this mindset. You adopt this philosophy that who you are is who you are, and that's okay. If you are afraid of germs and you have certain little nuances about you that you know might be weird to other people, so what? It's not affecting them. They're just being judgy. If you want to be judgy, whatever. That's on you, not on me. Don't you have your own life to sort out? I've got my own stuff to sort out. Don't look at my life and tell me what to sort out. You sort out your stuff. I'll sort out my stuff. And guess what? I don't really have to sort out my stuff if I don't mind the way I am. Because some people walk around with dysfunctions or weird behaviors or whatever you want to call them, and they get through life just fine. And some people stress about what they do and what others think about them, and that can be what holds us back from being the happiest we can be, the most comfortable in our own skin. So I really do think that's a first major step, is to be comfortable in your own skin with whatever is going on in your life, you know, as long as it's not hurting someone else. If it hurts them because they're judgmental about it, that's on them. So that's the first step, you know, own what you are, own who you are, and own what you do. Because you may have stuff to work on, sure, but that's your stuff. It's not anybody else's. And if it affects them because they can't get past their perception of you, again, it's on them. Now, there's another part of this that I haven't talked about, which is the fear of something happening, like the fear of fear of getting fired, for example. Like if my boss gets angry, I might get fired. Let's dig into that. What's the problem? Why would you be afraid of getting fired? Well, that's my source of money. Okay, so you have no source of money and you just got fired. How is that a big deal? I know it's a big deal. I know these questions are a big deal, but I want them to trigger something in you and pull out what's really in there. Because when I went through this questioning process myself of, well, why am I afraid to get fired? Because that was one of my questions. It was because, well, I need money. And then I would ask myself the question, okay, when I didn't have a job before, how did I survive without money? I have survived without money. I made it. And then when I started realizing that I survived, which I was talking about earlier, you go through a process and you survive it, you have a reference that you can do it again. So if it happens again, you'll be okay. I know some people are going to say, you're not always okay. I know that. It's not always pleasant, and sometimes it's downright debilitating. Sometimes you think you're going to die. And it can be a huge challenge. And when you survive, you look back and say, I made it. I made it through it. So this is why I think it's important to dig in and find out what is the real fear. What is the underlying fear? What is the deeper fear inside? If I get fired, then what? I have no money. Okay, I have no insurance. That's a real thing. These are real fears. These are real worries. And I don't necessarily want you to just be fearless and say, well, fine, they can fire me. But at the same time, my life has gotten a lot easier when I've developed that philosophy, that attitude. I'm not telling you to do it. I'm just saying I don't let that fear run my life anymore because it may never happen. That's another thing. This is what anxiety is all about. Stuff that may never happen is what we worry about. That's anxiety. Or in a nutshell, we worry about things that may never happen. And when they don't, we continue worrying about them. It's something that we do. We're very good at worrying. We're very good at being anxious. I have been very good about being anxious about money myself. Because when there's a bad week or a bad month, then my fears might kick in and say, oh, I guess this is it. You're going to go broke. And then I have to ask myself, wait, where is that coming from? Why do I think I'd go broke? Because I know me well enough to know that if no more money started coming in, that I would be looking for a job tomorrow and I would find one. Not saying I'd find one tomorrow, but I would look and find one. I would figure it out. I would wash windows. I would pressure wash driveways. I would do something. I would figure it out. Not everyone has all the options that I do, I know. But I have references. This is what I'm talking about. You have references in your past that you made it through because you're still here. You made it through the hard stuff or some hard stuff, and you're still here. So you have references that you can survive. You have references that you can get through it and sometimes even thrive. And sometimes the hard stuff you went through brought some benefit with it. Sometimes there was a blessing in disguise. And so I like to look at things like that that can be helpful moving forward. I mean, as far as like this person wrote, they're afraid to do something. They're afraid to show their food. They're afraid they're going to get their boss mad. This almost sounds like they were afraid of disappointing that person who walked in the room. I'm not saying you were, but to the person who wrote, if you were afraid of that person walking in the room of disappointing them, why? Why are you afraid of disappointing that person? Or maybe you just believed them when they said, well, the boss will be mad. Why are you afraid of disappointing the boss? Well, I don't want to lose my job. Why are you afraid of losing your job? Because it's what pays the bills. Well, why are you afraid of not paying your bills? What? That's a stupid question. I know. But it's important. It's an important question because it's what helps us dig deeper into what's really going on down there, what's driving our behaviors and what's driving our decisions and what might make us feel like we're a child again and crying, and it might make us regress into a younger version of ourselves. And now we feel powerless. We feel like we can't do anything. We can't do anything right. We can't do anything to help ourselves get out of a situation. We feel like we're in trouble and our caretakers will be mad at us. And if our caretakers are mad at us, how is that a problem? This is where we dig even deeper. How is it a problem that mommy or daddy is mad at us? Well, I want to be loved. I don't want to be in a house that nobody loves me. Well, how is it a problem if they don't love you? This is getting really deep. But if you come up with the answers to these questions, what ends up happening is you figure out the deepest, most powerful drivers of your behavior. If you say, well, I don't want to feel alone. Well, how is being alone a bad thing? Now you're into some very deep level survival stuff. This is where you might even hit on your fear of not existing. And that could be the same as fear of death, fear of dying. And how is it bad if you're dead? How is it bad if you're not here anymore? And I know those aren't easy questions either, and they're probably very unfair. And it's not something I really want you to focus on either. Some people have that fear and they obsess on that too. But all these questions I'm asking are designed to help you dig underneath what you believe you're afraid of or you believe you should be afraid of. Because there's always something deeper. So to the person who wrote that in the Facebook group, I don't know if this is going to help you or not, or if there's a solution in here for you or not. But I do know if I was going through what you're going through or what you went through, that's what I would do. That's what the questions that I've asked you today, the drilling down, the digging in, learning about myself at the deeper level, and certainly being okay with who I am and being comfortable in my own skin and not being afraid to look at someone and say, well, I'm sorry you can't accept me for who I am. Because that's probably what I'd say. I'm sorry you can't accept me for who I am because that's who I am. If you have a problem with it, I guess you'll have to work that out with your therapist. But that's me. I don't know if you want to be in that space either, but I just want to throw that little light humor right at the end here. And I'm very grateful that you wrote that and shared that. And I hope this helps in some way. Thanks for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank our patrons this week, Harriet, Paige, and Steven. I am so grateful for you. These are the financial backers of the show. They found value in the show and decided to give back because they could. I am very humbled by your contributions. Thank you again, patrons. And if you find value in the show and you want to give back, you can do so over at moretob.com. And there are options to do that over there. Thank you again, patrons. And for our show on how to deal with the difficult relationship, listen to my other podcast called Love and Abuse over at loveandabuse.com. And if you know you're the difficult one in the relationship, join the program that is helping a lot of people heal over at healedbeing.com. And finally, thanks to Kevin McLeod of incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And my final thought on what we were talking about today is the one sentence that I did not address, which is the person who wrote said, I feel like I'm 10 again when I could never do anything right and I was in trouble when I didn't even try. So I think what they mean when I didn't even try was when I wasn't even trying to get in trouble. It just happened and nothing I can do about it. The sentence, I feel like I'm 10 again when I could never do anything right. This could be the trigger of it all. This could be the cause that caused everything to go downhill when it did. Because when you were 10 and you couldn't do anything right, my question is, what were you afraid of losing? I like to ask this question every now and then too. What were you afraid of losing? Let's just say that the person in your life, your caretaker, your mom, your dad, they disciplined you. They told you you were in trouble. And maybe they even said you can't do anything right. I hope not, but some parents do that. And when that happened, there's something you were afraid of losing. This is where I go with this. There's always something we're afraid of losing. Otherwise, we wouldn't be upset about it. So we are afraid of losing something, which makes us upset. Now, I could guess, maybe you didn't want to lose the love of your mom and your dad. And I did sort of hit on that in the segment that we were just talking about it. But the point is to figure out what you were afraid of losing, what you were afraid of not getting more of. Because once you know what you were afraid of losing, this is where self-parenting can be very helpful. This is where you self-parent your inner child. If your inner child was afraid of losing love and connection and support or whatever your inner child was going through, that's what you give your inner child today. That's what you give it now. And when you give it what it lacked or what it feared losing back then, you start to fill that gap in your life. Again, this is not necessarily in depth. This is very simple the way I'm describing it. But it really does come down to giving yourself what you didn't have or what you fear losing or what you still believe you don't have today to your inner child. That inner child is basically you as a child that still has their thoughts and their fears and their aspirations and their confusion and all this stuff that the child never figured out. And when you grew up to be an adult, again, that stuff generalized into other areas of your life. So you carry around these old beliefs and old patterns that don't necessarily function well in the adult world. And when you're carrying those things around, what you described in your message, that kind of stuff can happen. Let me give you an example. When I was four, I went through an abuse situation. It wasn't severe, but it was an abuse situation. And I had to go back in time in my mind. And well, there's actually a neat side story with this, but I'm going to go here first. I went back in time in my mind and saw myself in that abuse situation and told myself, I'm here for you. I told myself, I know this is hard. It's going to be over soon. I know this is very difficult for you, but I'm here for you. I'm going to give you the love you deserve. I'm going to give you the hug you need. I'm going to show you that not everyone is like this. You know, what's happening to you now? Not everyone is like this. You deserve to be loved. You deserve to be cared for. And this person doesn't know how to do it. This person is sick. And you don't deserve what's happening. And I know you're crying right now. And I know this is scary. But I'm here for you. And, you know, I was there. And I visualized this happening. And when it was over, damn right I showed up for my kid. My inner child. Damn right I showed up for him because he needed me. He needed somebody to be there, to give him some self-worth again, to show him that he really was lovable and that some people, yeah, they're sick or broken or unhealed themselves, or maybe they're going through trauma or abuse themselves. It still doesn't really help the little kid to know that somebody else is going through abuse, so they're getting abused too. I mean, that doesn't help, but what helped me, my inner child, was telling him that I love him and he'll never be alone again, ever, because I'm here. I'm right here. And I've been with him ever since. And sometimes he goes off. Sometimes I have to say, no, no. You're not in charge. I am. I'm going to take care of this. Well, I don't say it that way, but I'll take over. You know, we can't go into your emotional triggers. We got to work on that. But I'm here. It's safe. It's not dangerous. It is safe. I'm going to prove it. Watch. Watch me take care of this. And I step in as my inner adult, I guess. I step in. And he calms down. And he learns something. And he realizes maybe I don't have to act like that again or have that type of reaction, or I don't have to run anymore. I don't have to be afraid anymore. And that has helped me a lot. So the side story that I started to mention was that a part of my healing actually involved me going to the place I lived, that the house I lived in when I was four. I didn't know it was going to happen. I just happened to be walking through, well, not happened to be, I purposefully walked through the old neighborhood that I used to live in just to walk by that house. I've told this story before, but if you haven't heard about it, it's really neat. I was walking by the house I grew up in. And my only intention was to walk by it. I wanted to see it. What does it look like now? And the owners just happened to be outside working on trimming the bushes or something like that, doing the gardening or something like that. And I saw them and they looked at me and they said, hi. And I said, hi. And I said, you know, I used to live here. And the guy's eyes brightened up. He said, you did? And I said, yes, I did. I was a child and I lived here for quite a few years. I even have pictures of this house when I was in it, but I just wanted to just see what it looked like today. And he was so excited. He said, well, come on in. And so I said, are you kidding me? And he said, no, come on in. So I followed him in and he showed me the kitchen that they have updated. And oh, the bathroom's in the same place and that room's in the same place. Wow, I can't believe I'm in this house. And it was an opportunity. I mean, it was amazing. First of all, they painted it. It was so bright. It used to be dark when I was a kid and it was so bright. It was so neat. And especially now that I'm 6'4", looking at the house from above, pretty much, it was a different experience for sure. but it was so amazing not only to see it updated, see it had changed. It was no longer the old darkness that it was, but there was also a part of me that was in that darkness. And I remember looking down at the location of where this abuse took place. And I remember myself as a child there, but this time I'm looking down at this image in my mind, but I'm in the place that it happened. And I remember reaching up and touching the ceiling, which I could never do as a child, because I wanted to connect. I wanted to connect with the house. I wanted to really be there with it. And I looked down and I saw myself as a child in that situation. And I was able to connect with my inner child in a totally different way, a totally deeper, more meaningful way. Something, nothing like I'd ever experienced before. And I saw him there and I said the same things. I'm here for you. It's going to be over shortly. Don't worry. We're going to make it through this. And I love you. And I'm going to take care of you. And I just did that. It was only a few seconds. I had to do it in real, really quick, because I can't have the new owner of the house looking at me trying to figure out what's going on over there. But I did it really quick. And then I was grateful and I just moved on, and he showed me the rest of the house, and something really, really healed in me that day. I still tear up thinking about it. I really enjoy that I was able to do that. I am so grateful for their generosity to bring me into their, a complete stranger, into their house. Just because I said, I lived here. I gotta look up those old pictures and send it to them. I know the address. Hey, this is your house way back when. I want to find those pictures now that I think about it. Anyway, I wanted to share that with you. That's what I mean, is that when you connect with that part of yourself in the past, and you give that part of yourself what they needed back then, that's when you can start filling in the gaps, or maybe helping you heal some emotional triggers that you're carrying around, or some of your fears or worries. And when you start healing those things, then the child doesn't run the show anymore. You do. You can run the show. You can take over. You can show that child the confidence they need to get through any situation, even if you're scared, because you have more resources, you have more strength, you have more power, you have more abilities than that child could ever hope to have at that age. And that's the gift you can give to them. I hope you got something from this episode. Always keep an open mind, because that's how you step into your power, and that's how you create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
It's Can-Can, over 50 years of endless deals.
Now, Shopify does the Can-Can, selling lots of brands on everything.
deals at ShopRite's Can-Can Sale. Going on now. You can't miss it.